Good morning. It's good to be here. We as teachers spend so much time putting out, and it's really nice to have a day like this where we can just come and take in and be inspired ourselves. So thank you, all of you teachers, for what you do on a day like this to energize each other. By way of introduction, I don't know who a lot of you are. I'm Craig Horst. I teach at Shekinah Christian School. And the grades I mainly teach are grades 7 through 10. So as I talk today, keep that in mind. Some of the things I may talk about from my own experience may not apply to you. And if they don't, just disregard. If you visited my school, what would you see? You would see students who aren't always getting it right when it comes to relationships. They're trying, though. You would see parents who aren't always happy with my approach. Some parents would be saying, why are you meddling so much in my students' relationship life? Children will be children. They'll figure it out. And you would see other parents who may be saying, could you do more to protect my child? I don't want my child to be hurt in any way. And somewhere in all the middle of that, you'd find me, a teacher who makes a lot of mistakes. But I am passionate about relationships, and I care a lot that my students have the best possible chance at having good relationships while they're at school. So why do I care so much about relationships? Why are relationships important? Picture your life and all its different facets. Think of church life, work life, home life, all the different pieces of your life, and think about which section of your life is not very closely related to relationships. Every piece of your life, if your relationships aren't good, it makes or breaks it. So think about it. By the way, you as a teacher are modeling and teaching relationships to your students. You are setting them up to either be successful or unsuccessful in all these different pieces of their life. It's a serious thing. School is a great place for students to practice relationships that they will use, or to practice the skills that they'll use in relationships for their whole lives. And most importantly, relationships are the core of our Christian faith. I'd like to read a few verses from Matthew 22, verses 34 to 40, and this is when the Pharisees came and were trying to trick Jesus. But when the Pharisees had heard that he put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him, saying, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. The second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. God values relationships highly. Our relationship with him is most important. But our relationships with each other are second in importance. And on these two hang all the law and the prophets. We need good relationships in our Christian life. Another verse from 1 John 4, verse 20. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? Jesus isn't among us as a physical human being for us to love in the way that we relate to other people. But I believe that God puts other people in our lives to give us a chance to show our love to him. A quote from, I believe, Guy Dowd. I'm not convinced of that. But he said, you only love Jesus Christ as much as the person you love the least. It's a challenge for me. How are my relationships doing? And that are my relationships with other people are reflecting my relationship with Jesus. So, I think we all could agree that relationships are important. I think we can, though, holler till we're blue in the face, trying to make relationships happen at school. And the truth is relationships cannot be forced. I believe that we as teachers can nudge, we can encourage, but we can't force relationships to work. I think our job is to create the atmosphere where relationships have the best possible chance of thriving. And then that brings us back to the title, Nurturing Flourishing Friendships. When I heard that title, I may be thinking pictures, but I think the picture that popped into my mind was a greenhouse, and just where you're giving plants all that they need to thrive. And our classrooms should be those places where the atmosphere is such that our students want to love each other. The atmosphere is great. So I'm going to talk quite a bit about atmosphere first, creating the atmosphere where our students can have the best possible chance of thriving in relationships. And then if we have time at the end, I'm going to open it up for about 5 minutes, maybe, give or take, where you and a couple people around you can discuss, you can practice some relational skills, and discuss practical ways that you could enhance the atmosphere in your classroom for better relationships. And then when that's done, I'm going to come back up and see if anybody has anything they'd like to share with the whole group or any other general relationship tips. So you can be thinking about that. So how does one create an atmosphere where relationships thrive? And first of all, it starts with you as a teacher. The students are watching you. They watch you at school, how you relate to your co-teachers. And they watch also how you relate to their classmates. Outside of school, they watch how you relate with your peers, and this may vary a little bit depending how involved you are in the community where your students come from. They also watch how you relate to their parents, and that can be difficult sometimes. But make sure that all your relationships are reflecting your students, what relationships should look like. You as a teacher must believe in the unconditional love of God for all people. In 1 John 4, verse 9 to 11, it says, "And this was manifested, the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another." Our love for our students starts in a belief of God's love for us and for each one of them. To love, one must know what it is to be loved. Your students need to feel loved. Do you love your students? And do they know it? And how do you show it? I'd like to talk a little bit about the five love languages. You're probably familiar with them. Quality time, words of affirmation, physical touch, deeds of service, and gifts. And all of us as human beings fit probably somewhere into that spectrum. We all have our way that we prefer to give and receive love. A little bit about myself, just to give context. I'm a person who feels deeply. I'm a feeler, and I think I've come to accept that. And my own primary love language is definitely quality time. I love spending time one-on-one with people, and if I don't have that in a relationship, it's really not a relationship for me. I also love to give and receive words of affirmation. And so I just, up until more recently, I expected that all people were like that. I just kind of thought that if I spend enough quality time with everybody and affirm everybody enough, and then things are going to be good. And I'd heard of the five love languages, but I never really was inspired to check them out myself until more recently I heard another teacher talking about them and the power of them in his own classroom. So I did some study a little bit on that. And that was really good for me to realize that not everybody communicates love and appreciation in the same way. So I'm going to talk a little bit about each one and how you could implement each of these languages into your classroom. Quality time, my favorite. So with those two love languages that I like to communicate with, I was quite successful. I had pretty good relationships with a lot of students, but there was a few that I wasn't connecting with, and I could never figure out why. I would affirm them and give them time, and it just, something wasn't connecting. So going to quality time. You can spend time with them outside of school, and this might look different depending on what stage of life you're in. But find ways where you can do something with them outside of the classroom, especially those students who you aren't involved with in their community. It's going to take a little more effort. I had a student who I taught for several years, not from my community, and I wasn't really that connected with him. Things were okay, but I didn't feel a connection between me and him. And more recently, I took him and several other boys to a tool sale that I was going to, just to spend some time outside of school. And he came alive. I had never seen a side of him that I saw that night. And since then, I think we've had a deeper connection. So it took a little bit of intentional effort to spend some time outside of school. You can chat with them at lunchtime. I like sitting in the desks with them and just chatting about whatever they're talking about. Another thing I like to do is flooding rink with students. I can give some good one-on-one time. With our Canadian winters the last 2 years, I haven't got to do that real often, unfortunately. But it can be a good time. You're harnessed together with this hose walking around the rink. You can't really get away from each other, and you just talk, and it's good. Another thing I like to do is during job time. I like going out and doing jobs with them, like say they're cleaning the bathroom or something. Work alongside them while you're both just working, just talking. Sometimes things come out that you weren't expecting. Meet their eyes when you're talking to them and listen to what they're not saying. This is especially true if you're teaching teenagers. Spend time with them and listen to what they're not saying. There's a lot going on that they're not telling you about. Words of affirmation. I had a student who really was struggling with neatness, still is, working on it. But I was talking to his mom about this. How can I motivate him to be more neat? And she said that one day that you affirmed him and told him how good he was doing in his work, he came home and couldn't stop talking about it. And I realized that I needed to be more free to give words of affirmation when he was doing well. Affirm them when their work is done well. Affirm them when you notice a deed of service, when they help out a younger student of their own free will. Notice it. And affirm good behavior. Sometimes we are chasing around trying to nail down the bad behavior, and that's good and important. But sometimes we need to just recognize when they are putting a lot of effort into keeping things good. And sometimes it feels like there's nothing to affirm, but you can maybe at least affirm the effort. And I'm not sure what you do when there isn't even effort, but find something where you can affirm your student. And the third one, physical touch. Now this one is touchy, so be careful. Especially, now this varies a lot depending on what age you're teaching. If you're teaching younger grade students, this will look different than if you're teaching upper grades. As an upper grade teacher, I need to be very respectful of students' physical space. So obviously, I won't be touching my students. I just don't feel comfortable with that. But you can be intentional about being in their space. There's some students that just will ask and ask and ask questions, like dumb questions, until you just come and spend time beside their desk. And what they really want is you to just spend a bit of time in their space. So maybe just go do that before you get frustrated with the questions that they're asking. Stop by their desk to see how their work is going. Just spend a bit of time standing in their bubble. You can touch their desk, you can touch their books, things like that. But please be respectful of them. If they're cringy about it when you're by their desk or in their space and you're trying to help them out with a problem, maybe you should just go work it out on the board and they can tell you the steps. The fourth one, gifts. So I had a student, I'm going to call her Jade. I taught her for several years and things were okay, but not great. And I could never figure out what it was that really meant something to her. I gave her lots of words of affirmation because she's super talented. So I'd always be affirming her on the good things that she did. And she'd kind of giving me a look like, whatever, every time I'd affirm her, just could you just move on, ignore that? And I couldn't really figure out what was going on. Then in December of this past year, me and Nate had gone down to Florida for a couple days. And while I was down there, I got a mixed assortment of keychains. Small thing. I was thinking about my students while I was there. Brought them back, and each keychain was unique. They were all very different from each other. And so I spent some time sitting there thinking about which keychain fit each student, their personality, their likes and dislikes. And then I told them when I gave them these keychains, I said, I spent some time thinking about each one of these, and I want it to fit you. And if it doesn't, I want you to tell me, because I want to make sure I can like match you. So I gave it to all of them, and a lot of them looked at it, and they're like, yeah, this is the right one, whatever. And then a few minutes passed, and her hand's up, and she said, it's not right. It's not the right one. And so high school is out of the classroom studying, so I still have a few left for them yet. And so I showed her one of the others, and I said, what about this one? Do you think this would be yours? And yeah, that's the one. And so I said, okay, I want you to have one that fits you. And I gave it to her, and she wears it on her sweater, and it's very important to her. And I needed to realize, so I like when people give me words of affirmation, and so I was dumping words of affirmation onto her. And I actually kind of hate gifts. You know, at the end of the year, as teachers, you get like 15 mugs and whatever all teachers give you or students give you. And I don't even like coffee. Like, could you? So it's just, I don't like gifts, really. And I needed to realize that she felt the same way about compliments. And I needed to respect what she appreciated. So some practical ways. Obviously, you're all on teacher's wage. And so you can't just be buying extravagant gifts for them all the time. But there is little things you can do. When you go on a trip somewhere, remember them. You can get something small. And that can mean a lot to them. When I was in Ukraine this summer, I got little flags for all of them from Ukraine. And some of them stuff them in their backpack right away, and they go home, and I doubt they know where they are anymore. And others still have them in their desk, and once in a while I see them pulling them out and looking at them. Random treats. I have a big box of Lindors. And once in a while, just like in math class or something, just walk around and give everybody a Lindor. And some students really value that. Some will just like eat them right away. I have a student who like saves, he has his little stash of all his Lindors that I've given him, and once in a while, like I see him like sitting there looking at them, and he could just eat them. And once in a while, he pulls one out, and he makes sure I'm watching, and he eats it. And so obviously it means a lot to him. Now, a thing you need to be careful with gifts is that you don't confuse that with rewards. A reward is a gift given to reward something they did. A gift is simply just a random gift where you're just appreciating them. And finally, deeds of service. You could help them clean out their desk, not in a humiliating way, but if it's job time and they don't have a job and their desk looks like a nightmare, maybe you should just sit down with them and help them go through it. Again, you could help them with their job on a day when they have homework to get done. Help out with flooding rink, even when you have a lot of other things to do. Sometimes just showing that that matters to you too. And put lots of effort into teaching their lessons. It's a way for you to serve them. You might think that they don't see whether you spent half an hour or 4 minutes on getting ready for a class you teach them, but they do sense it, and they value when you serve them. Another thing I like doing is letting my students serve me and serve them in return. So this works better at the start of the year when, in math class specifically, when they're doing a lot of review from previous years. And so kind of a spontaneous random thing. One day, grade 7 was doing something, learning a new concept that grade 8 had just learned a couple days before. And I just asked grade 8, would any of you like to come up and just teach grade 7 this concept? And one of them was like, sure. And so they came up and taught grade 7's math class. And I went and sat in their desk and worked on their math lesson. And it was fun. And so I like doing that, giving them a chance to serve me and serving them in return. And they love checking your work. So that can be fun. Another little thing, I teach chemistry. And so probably some of you are familiar with the periodic table of elements, and I don't have it memorized. And there's sometimes where you're trying to find something and you just cannot find that one silly symbol. And I've already just, rather than systematically going line by line, just call up a student and say, I'm looking for this. Could you help me out? And the student helped me find it, and he went back to his desk, and he just could not stop smiling. He was so happy to be able to serve. I'm going to talk about some more just random points about creating the atmosphere where your students can feel loved so that they just want to pour out that love to others. Greet your students by name in the morning. I think your last 10 minutes shouldn't be rushing around trying to finalize your day. Just have time to greet them and meet them in the eye when you do that. Ask about their weekend and tell them about yours. Smile often. Probably you've all heard the thing that the teacher's not supposed to smile till Christmas. That's false. I just do not agree with that. I think I get the sentiment, but please smile. Your students deserve it, and you look a lot better when you do it. Laugh with them. Don't play favorites. There is those students that will steal your heart, and I think that's normal, but everybody must be treated equally. So don't play favorites. Be sensitive to their bad days. And this looks different too, depending what ages you teach. But if you're teaching teenagers especially, be really sensitive to a day when things just are not going well for them. Maybe you just need to have a little bit of grace. And pray for them often. On the way to school can be a great time for you to just, while you're driving, pray for the different students by name. So I've talked a lot about atmosphere. And I believe that if you create the atmosphere where your students feel loved, their relationships can thrive, and you can begin to expect greatness out of their relationships. But if your classroom is a place where your students are unsure if they're loved and accepted, then I don't think it's fair for you to expect greatness in their relationships with each other. So now that we've talked about creating the atmosphere, I'd like to talk about some different practical things you can do to inspire good relationships between students. And again, this is some things I've done with my class of grade 7 through 10. Some of these things I would discourage trying with grade 1 and 2 or even 5 and 6. So sorry, younger teachers. Hopefully you can find something to take away. So one thing I started doing this year with my class, I call it a partner system. So you know when you're setting up the desk arrangement at the start of the year, I always tried to put everybody who liked anybody away from everybody else. And it just got so frustrating. And I had a teacher say, why don't you just put them beside the person they would maybe even like to be beside? Now, I was careful about that. But so I put pairs of students beside each other who I thought could work together. And so I teach 4 grades, and sometimes I'm teaching grade 9 and 10, and I don't have time. This is for grade 7, 8. I don't have time to answer all of their questions. And so they have a partner who sits across the aisle from them that if they have a part they're struggling with or question they're unsure what they're supposed to do about, they have the freedom to communicate with their partner about that. Obviously, they cannot just give the answer. So you need to be clear with your expectations about that, but they can point them in the direction of where they should look or explain how to do a part. Sometimes I also use those partners for assignments, say a lesson that I need to get done quickly, maybe a reading lesson or a history review or something. I just say, this one's to do with your partners, and 5 seconds later, their desks are all pulled together and they're working on it. Some risks with this is you could have students become lazy. And so you have to be aware and paying attention to that. If there's a student that feels like he's getting behind and suddenly he's really needing a lot of help until he's caught up with his partner, maybe you just have to step in and say, you can get this one on your own. This part is for you to do on your own. Also, it can be a chance for students to start socializing in class, and that's not the goal either. So you need to be super clear with your expectations. One thing I did with it at the start of the year, so I got one of my boy students to come up to the front, and I got him to stand facing away from me, and I told him to fall over, just fall backwards. And he asked a really good question. He said, "Do I trust you?" I said, "Well, that's a good question. We'll talk about it after." And I told him to do it again, and he fell over, and I caught him, and I let him stand up again, and then I said, "Do it again," and that time he just fell over right away, and I caught him. And I said, "If we would have continued to do this for 100 times, do you think Tristan's respect or his trust for me would be greater or less?" Well, obviously greater. And then I said, "What about on the 101st time, if I would let him fall on the ground and laugh at him? The trust would be broken, right?" And I said, "I'm putting this trust in you with this system we're bringing into place. And every time you respect that trust and use it in a way that is acceptable, it's like you catch me another time and my trust in you becomes greater. And if I come back to the classroom and you're all goofing around with your partners and stuff like that, it's like you've let me fall on the floor. I've put this trust in you, and it's going to take a long time for me to build that trust back, and it probably never will be quite the same." And they took that pretty seriously, and I think for the most part have been using those partners in an acceptable way. Some benefits I like to this system is students can learn teamwork. Students need to learn to work together even on days when they don't feel like it. So at the start of the year, you can make partners that are working totally fine. And there's just some days where they would rather get help from somebody else other than that person. And I love seeing them grit their teeth and have to go ask that person for help. It's good for them. Students are given a chance to save trust. You can put trust in them and they can protect that. And also, you may be raising up another teacher. Some students, through doing that, discover that they actually like telling people how to do things, and it's fun. Another thing you can do with your class is group projects. I like splitting my class into two groups, sometimes for a history review, and they're competing for the best grade on that review. And they, as a group, all have to come to an agreement on every question, and then we check it and see who got the best grade. I love hearing them heatedly debating about what should be the proper answer for a certain question. They're learning to work through disagreements, and sometimes they have to stoop, and then it's wrong, and I told you so, and it's good for them. Teamwork challenges can be good for art. A couple weeks ago, with grade 5 through 8, we did... backing up a little bit. So at the start of the week, I told my 4 grade 7 8 boys, "You're going to be foremen of this project." At the end of the week, I told them what it was. Nobody else knew what it was, so they had time to think about this. We did a balloon tower challenge. And so the 4 boys were foremen. They knew who their teams were early in the week, so they could start thinking about strengths and who was going to be best suited for which task. And then they were given 100 balloons and scotch tape. And that was all. And they, as a foreman, had to lead their team and see who could. Well, we had 3 different rewards. We had tallest tower, most aesthetically pleasing, and best teamwork. And so there were several of us, the high school students and I, were judges. And we walked around and tried to look serious and inspected all this. And it was really good to see them having to work together as a team and follow a leader, which was good. More things. You can play team sports and focus on the teamwork part of it. You can play team sports and have no teamwork happening. Never allow negative comments about anybody at school, and you as a teacher should also be that way. Whether it's a person in politics or whatever it is, you as a teacher should be respectful of other people and expect the same out of your students. So don't allow any negative comments, but then also make sure your students understand that they can choose to be a victim too. So sometimes there's these people that are out there looking to see who's hurting them, and you can choose to be the victim to that, or you can choose to just let it run off. Take time to recognize the unique gifts and skills in the group of your students. This can be, they hate doing it at first, especially if they have to talk about themselves. But they like talking about the strengths of other people. One time I had a student who was struggling quite a bit, just emotionally. He was pretty stressed out. And I knew he really appreciates when people say positive things about him, so I kind of did it for him, but it was good exercise for the whole class. So I gave all the students sticky notes, one for everybody in the classroom, and they had to write one thing they just really appreciated about each other person in the classroom. And then we stacked up all the sticky notes for one person, stapled it, and they get this little sticky note book. And that student, I saw him, he kept that thing in his desk for the whole year. And sometimes I'd see him, he'd get his work done, he'd just be sitting there looking through his little book and just smiling to himself, feeling loved and appreciated. So that can be a good thing. Teach students to take an interest in the lives of others. We all like talking about ourselves, and it's a life skill to learn to take an interest in others. And as we do that, we'll find that people take an interest in us too. Be open and honest with your students about their relationship struggles, and that could look different depending on what grade level you teach. If it's grade one and two, you may just have to tell them that I need you to be a friend with so-and-so. And I remember my grade two teacher doing that, and it was good, and it worked. With older students, maybe just telling them that they have to be a friend with someone might not work. Maybe you need to ask a few more questions. One thing I like doing is when my students... So if there is a relational hiccup happening, if I can send the two people who I think are the problem, not like between each other, but say the person or the person who has an issue with somebody else, send them out of the classroom to study somewhere, which isn't unusual. And they're used to me dropping in to see how studying is going. And I use that time to just sit down and ask them what's going on with this. Hear their side of it. And then also tell them what you're expecting. And I've found they've been pretty respectful of that. Be careful with your body language when you're doing that. If you come into the room where they're studying and tower over them and tell them what you expect to see change, be careful about that. Sit down at the table with them that they're studying at or on the floor and just be relatable. Another thing you could do is get your students to write an essay on relationships, and it will force them to think about their own relationships and strengths and weaknesses. Pray together as a class. I love that time. We do it once a week. We as a class pray together. And along with that, be vulnerable. Obviously, within reason, you as a teacher aren't going to tell them that you're struggling with a certain student in the classroom or that a certain spiritual struggle you have. But you can find ways to be vulnerable. Like I told my students at the start of this week, that I have a talk coming up this weekend, and I'm really nervous about it. And I want to be able to put all I can into your lessons, but there might be a few things that are going to fall through this week. And then in prayer time, I ask them to pray for the talk today, that I wouldn't be too nervous to talk to these scary people. And so find ways to be vulnerable as a teacher. And when you do that, it will allow them to be vulnerable too. I love when students during prayer time talk about somebody that they're really concerned for or something they're nervous about, a test maybe or something. You're teaching your students that it's okay to share with other people difficult things. And vulnerability in relationships is so important. So model that to your students. Another thing you should do as a class is sing together. So pray together, sing together. There's science behind it, but I won't go into it. About when we all sing as a group, our hearts begin to beat together. And while that's physical, I think there may be greater things happening when our hearts are all beating together. So do that as a class. I'd like to talk about two kind of unique struggles that you might face in your classroom with relationships. So I'm going to talk a little bit about cliques. You probably all have been part of a clique sometime, and probably all of you have seen cliques in your classroom, so it's not something new. And I don't have much to say on this, but I think you need to realize, I've needed to realize that cliques and friends are separate things. Sometimes we get the feeling like there's a clique happening and we're asking them to stop being friends. We're not asking them to stop being friends. We're asking them to include more people in that friend circle. So realize the difference between the two. You don't go blazing in and try to just rip two people apart. Possibly you could allow them to experience what they think they really want. So you probably all know what single base is, where they all pick their own bases and play the game. So near the start of the year, we were playing single base, and there was three girls that went and put their bases way out from everybody else, like on the other end of the property. And they all caught each other, and we're all on the base together. And they stood out there and waited for people to come and play with them. And people would come out, and they'd run it a little bit, chase them back, and people were getting so frustrated. They couldn't catch them, and they weren't catching anybody else, and they just kind of were doing their own thing. So I told the students, I said, that were on my team, I said, let's just go get the other bases for now. Let's not worry about them. And so we went, and eventually we were all the bases were over on the other side of the school, so they couldn't even see us where we were. And I figured they'll come and find us when they feel ready. And what I felt like doing was going up there and telling them to just move your base down where everybody else is, be part of the game. But I decided to just let them experience what they think they wanted. And so that day we were running a different schedule, so we actually didn't have a bell for recess. So they didn't hear when the bell went. And I just told the rest, I said, we'll just head in, we'll have story. And when they feel ready, they'll come and join us. And so we had story. And I couldn't believe how long. This went on like 20 minutes. You'd think you'd catch on if you haven't seen another human. But so after story, I went outside, and they're still standing a few feet from their base, looking around, trying to see if anybody might be coming. And so I just called them in, and I said, we're ready for reading class now. And they looked very bewildered, and one of them was very ashamed. Some of them tried to kind of laugh it off, but I could tell it really affected them. And next recess, their bases were very close to everybody else. So let them experience what they think they want, and then they'll realize it's not what they want. Do realize, though, that some students will be oriented more toward one-on-one relationships, and that in itself is not wrong. If it's forever with always the same person, that's when it becomes a problem. But if there is a person who doesn't do well in a group, don't try to force them to be part of a group. Sometimes it's a good challenge for them, though. And then the scary one, what about boy-girl drama in your classroom? What do you do when that's happening? And I don't have much to say on this either, but realize that the attraction is natural. In teenagers, it is not an abnormal thing for it to happen. That doesn't make it right in the school context, but it doesn't make them a horrible person because they liked another person. I think the most important thing to do, I don't know what the most important thing is to do, maybe we should pray for your students, but also communicate with parents is super key in anything like that. Sometimes parents of young teenagers aren't sure when it's time to have that discussion with their child, and you alerting them to what's going on at school can give them the confidence to know that it's time to have that discussion. I walked in on teasing that was happening between some boys when they were doing their jobs, and I wasn't really sure what to do about it. I talked to them a little bit about how teasing and talking about girls like that is making girls objects, and we don't want to do that. And then I forget what I all said, but they seemed very willing to cooperate with that. And then I just called all of their parents afterward, and I said, this happened at school today. I'm not expecting you to do anything as a parent, but if I was a parent, I would want to know that this happened. And I don't know if all of them talked to their sons about what had happened. I know the one said, me and my wife haven't been sure when it's time to have that discussion, and now we know we need to, so thanks for telling us. So, hugely important, I think, to communicate with the parents. Again, you can only do so much, especially in these types of situations. Trying to force something to not be there can actually make it worse. So they need to respect the way they need to relate at school, but trying to rip the whole thing apart can drive it underground and make it worse. So that basically brings me to the end of my talk. I would like to give you a few minutes to just with the people around you. Which clock is right? The front one? Oh, then we don't have as much time as I thought. I was looking at that one. Okay. I was just looking at the minute hand. Wow. Okay. When did you want to dismiss for lunch? 12 o'clock. Well, then I'm not going to open it up for you to discuss with each other. You can do that at lunchtime. I'm just going to open it up for a little bit. If anybody has any specific things for creating a good atmosphere for relationships in your classroom, or things that have worked or not worked for you, if there's nothing, that's fine. You can say those things at lunchtime. But I'll open it up for a little bit. I like that.
I like what you said about different things affecting people. Students, just yesterday I was checking a test. What do you think would be the best option in this scenario? And, well, what do you think? Question can either be right or wrong. So he had one word basically as an answer. Well, that's not an explanation. So I thought heavily. Then I thought, you know what? I'm going to explain. I just wrote a couple sentence note. The only way this question could be wrong is if you don't follow the instructions, which says explain. So I had a test. I was feeling a little negative toward it. I see he's reading the notes. I backed up to his test. He saw I left you a little note. He just grinned like a Cheshire cat. Sheepish is all good, but he knew. Mm-hmm. But that, like, he liked that. Mm-hmm. Even if it was kind of a negative tone.
Yeah, there are some students that really, really do enjoy getting a handwritten note. I like when my students give me handwritten notes, too, so I can't really blame them, even if it is negative. Yeah. Leaving them a note in their lesson can be a way of connecting with your students. Anything else? So, it's a good question. So in that situation, I didn't mention, so when all the other students came in, I said, what did I say? We're not going to talk bad about those girls. And when they come in, I don't want anybody to laugh at them. We're just going to go on with our day. And I kind of told them what the idea was behind it, but I tried to be very sensitive to not humiliate in that experience. But I don't know, does anybody else have thoughts on that? How do you break apart a clique without bringing a negative feeling on the people involved? That's why I sometimes like when a click is happening to communicate that outside of class when they are studying somewhere to drop in and talk about it there where everybody knows there's a click happening and I say, John and Mark, could you stay in while everybody else heads out? And they all know, oh, John and Mark are going to get told that they mayn't be friends with each other anymore. And so maybe finding discreet ways of addressing it where nobody even found out that it happened can be another thing. I've used that already. Anything else? Mm-hmm. Well, thank all of you for those thoughts. I'm sure there's more, and I think you're all hungry, so I'm going to go let you eat lunch and you can talk about it there. In closing, I'll leave you this question. Are you giving your students the best possible chance to experience a life of healthy relationships? And I'm going to again read 1 John 4, verse 20 and 21. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also.